We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, still over there in wonderful and wintry Chicagoland, the one and only Dan.
What a tone,
sir.
Still over there.
Still over there. Sir, how you doing?
Yeah. I'm pretty good. I didn't get a ton of sleep because I was up reading after the game and thinking about the game, and I didn't have any dog in that fight. But, you know, a huge game like that, just it gets my mind, gets the wheels and gears turning. So didn't get a ton of sleep, but, you know, I'm running on adrenaline and a good amount of cold brew in this Jumbo Solid Verbal mug.
The Jumbo Solid Verbal mug, which is available, yeah, by the way, verballers.com until the end of the month via our Patreon. We, of course, will be available all off-season long, though we'll talk a little bit about how we're shifting our schedule. We've been discussing over the course of the last few weeks, but now that we are squarely entrenched in off-season mode, believe it or not, we don't have as much to talk about. So that's the way it works here. And we're going to be switched up.
Sort of.
We
have new things to talk about. Yeah.
Switching up to twice a week here for the foreseeable future. But hey, welcome back in. I'm Ty. He's Dan. This is the Solid Verbal. Don't forget to follow along via your favorite podcasting app of choice. Also, you can always follow along on social media, going out to Facebook, to Twitter, to Instagram, to YouTube, to Twitch. We're all over the place. We're going to be doing stuff all off season long. The big story, Dan, believe it or not, the season has completed. We didn't know if we'd ever make it to this point, which I think in and of itself is a huge accomplishment for those around college football. It wasn't always pretty. It certainly was not symmetrical and was lumpy and misshapen throughout the course of the last however many months.
Aren't we all asymmetrical, lumpy, and misshapen in our own ways, physically, emotionally, mentally? It's okay.
It all culminates, though, with Alabama as your national champion. Surprise, surprise. 52-24 is your final score. We're going to go into a fair amount of detail over the course of the next 45 minutes or so. We also did a live stream last night, Dan.
We are all over the internet, Ty, and I apologize for that.
4.5 hours of our live stream last night. We had myriad guests on, from Bill Connolly to Ari Wasserman. We had Michael Felder on for a good chunk of the second half. Marshall Newhouse, Nicole Auerbach.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's
Adam Amin.
How could I almost forgot Adam Amin. So
yeah.
Why don't we start here at the very top? 52-24. We previewed this game about a week ago. How did the game play out relative to our expectations?
Our expectations are separate. You have your expectations. I had mine. I ultimately, though, I think you liked Alabama maybe a little more coming into the game than I did, I believe.
Yeah.
I can't keep everything straight. I liked Ohio State to cover and keep it relatively close. I was wrong. So relative to my expectations, I thought Ohio State was going to succeed more downfield than they did. I wasn't necessarily confident in Ohio State's defense and their ability to wrangle Alabama, even in the way that Notre Dame was able to in the first round of the playoff. But
yeah.
I was somewhat confident in Ohio State's ability to make plays because we've seen the better quarterbacks that Alabama has played and their ability to make plays downfield, you know, between Kyle Trask and Matt Corral anyway. There were plays to be made and advantages to take advantage of, matchups to take advantage of. So I was wrong in that. I was wrong in that Alabama's defensive game plan and ability to wrangle and run with the better. And, you know, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave made plays, and obviously Trey Sermon went out early. But in terms of chunkier plays, I think I expected more from Ohio State, and that's a credit to Alabama's pass rush and their ability to run with some really great Ohio State receivers.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a quote here from Ryan Day that I think summed it up quite well. Quote, I think there's a feeling of if you don't score, you're going to get behind and then the pressure mounts. And that was Ryan Day said of facing the Alabama offense. It's so true, right? I've talked about teams getting in a hole and then Alabama just sort of beats them with the stick and you can never get closer than arm's length to them. I think he summed it up better than anybody ever could. There's that pressure that has to mount on you. Like, I think in looking back, the ability of Alabama to get their guys in space, to keep it relatively simple, to turn basically the entire game plan over to Devontae Smith before he got hurt, to do what he did in the first half was an absolute testament to what Sark was trying to do on offense all year. And that is just get your best players the ball. It's as simple as it is painful to watch if you're an opponent. And look, the numbers speak for themselves here. Mac Jones went off. Najee Harris very much caught up, I guess, in the backdrop of what transpired through the passing game, but still had a really good game on his own. And Devontae Smith, named the most outstanding offensive player on the field, getting that honor, setting records, really after only playing a half before he dislocated a finger in the third quarter.
Yeah. And Jaylen Waddle was a participant. I want to go big picture, by the way, because there's all sorts of different wrinkles and elements of this game. Alabama had better coaches and better players last night. And those coaches and players game plan, practice, and executed better than Ohio State's coaches and players. Now, availability was certainly an issue more so for Ohio State, down starting defensive tackle Tommy Togiai and Tyreek Smith, a starting defensive end. But also, these things happen. Alabama's down their starting center. Ohio State has injuries up front. What it came down to was Nick Saban, and Andy Staples wrote a really nice story for The Athletic about this. And for the first of all, not having anybody from his 2017 coaching staff that won a national championship playing coaching against Ohio State is wild. That's just a wild, nuggety factoid. And two, Nick Saban, when he made the transition to the spread and spread elements,
yeah,
Alabama's been all gas, no breaks in these big games. They respected Ohio State in a way that they respect everybody on this type of stage, where it's like, okay, it's fourth and goal. We're not kicking. It was, you know, Ari Wasserman came on and he said, you know, leave your kickers at the hotel. Leave your kickers on the bus.
No.
And it was, what's important? When you have the ball, you can score. And in the first half, Ohio State, they did make plays. It was somewhat difficult at times. It was, you know, needed a one-handed catch from, was it Jeremy Ruckert down the field?
Yep.
To set up a touchdown. But it was Alabama never shrinking away from the moment. And it's tough to say, okay, Ohio State's in plus territory, but it's fourth and nine. They should definitely go for it. But we've seen what this Alabama offense can do pretty much every time they touch the ball. And that scores six. And so those are the moments, whether it was on the 6-yard line that Ohio State kicked a field goal.
Yeah.
It was obvious to anybody that has watched either of these teams that Ohio State was going to need to score 45 to have a chance in this game. And they can. Justin Fields is great. The offense at its best is excellent. But kicking that field goal and shrinking away ahead of the half, just running the ball on third and long, it was it was disappointing. And this is something we touched on a little bit going into the game. Like, what does Ryan Day look like for the first time in this game? Is he, does he ever use the term in his head, field position? And he did. He did. He shrunk away from the moment. Now, the bigger concern was Ohio State's defense and just having no answer for Devontae Smith, like you said. And, you know, Alabama did a really nice job of, you know, whatever Ohio State's doing on defense, we're going to get the ball to Devontae Smith creatively. I don't think it was simple, like you said. The concept is simple, but what they actually did was pretty creative.
Sure.
And using motion and using different man beaters that, you know, Marshall actually talked about on the stream. It was fascinating to watch Devontae Smith, who everybody in the universe knew was going to be the big killer in this game, be the big killer.
There were no surprises in that respect.
Right.
He won the Heisman Trophy. He clearly had the best year of any receiver. Mm-hmm. And Sark went out and said, well, we're just going to throw him the ball. We're going to find ways to get him in space and let him run. And to the point on, you know, that little kind of motion play where it looked like maybe a jet sweep or an end around and he reversed field and went back to the pylon. Marshall's point on the stream was that different plays serve different purposes. You're not going to run that play if you need something like 25 yards, but if you need to get 10 to get to the pylon, you know that Devontae Smith in space against a linebacker, even a cornerback, a safety, whatever, he's going to be able to beat him to that corner and get six, and that's exactly what happened.
No, it's true. And Alabama came out with a sound game plan. And Ohio State, I mean, losing Trey Sermon, I think it was the first carry he hurt his shoulder.
He was in
for another play.
Yeah,
collarbone, shoulder, whatever it was. That's brutal.
First drive for Ohio State was brutal. I haven't seen his status update as of today. I know they took him to the hospital to do some further evaluation, which it sucks for him because he had a really great way to close out his campaign. Down the stretch, Master Teague, I think for his part, did a pretty good job. I don't know what more Ohio State could have really done, at least on the defensive side, to try and quell this Alabama offense.
Snuck Jeff Hafley, Jeffrey Okuda, Denzel Ward, you know, snuck those guys and put them in different uniforms.
Like, what do you do? What do you do? I don't know if there's anything that happened on the defensive side for Ohio State where we can point to it and say, aha, if they would have done something differently, it maybe would have changed the complexion of this game. Offensively, look, to the previous point, you do get in a hole and you do have to come out of perhaps your game plan to some extent to try and make up ground. And Ohio State found themselves in a situation that many teams before them over the course of this season and many seasons, frankly, have had to do against Alabama. So,
by the way, that fumble, the forced fumble and recovery and short field and touchdown, that's on the bingo card for how you beat Alabama.
Yeah.
I was so happy to see that for Ohio State because those are those crispy edges that we talked about that teams need. We're talking about a historically great Alabama offense. To keep up, you need those boxes checked. And that was what I think it was that got them their second touchdown, I believe, in the second quarter. That was encouraging to me that Ohio State capitalized on that turnover. No. It was just situationally that needed to happen, not recovering a fumble in the red zone, but taking advantage of those high leverage moments needed to happen all game long. And Ohio State, and I largely think it was a talent thing for Ohio State's defense. We talked about this with Michael Felder some, where it's just like the secondary wasn't last night where it has been for Ohio State in years past from a talent perspective to run with what Alabama does and the mismatches created. We saw the Devontae Smith matchup against, I think it was Tuff Borland, the Ohio State linebacker.
Yep.
That's not something you pencil in for a possible rep win for Ohio State.
That was the play. I don't know if it was a post or what it was, but Devontae Smith went deep.
Untouched,
got in behind the defense, and I think that was the 44-yarder that he caught.
Yes, and so it was a talent thing for Ohio State's defense, as crazy that is to say, because this is a Buckeye team that is recruited on an unfairly great level, but it really did show against an Alabama offense that is happy to just gash and take what you want them to gash you with. It did show at times where the mismatch issues were pretty clear along, I think, all three levels of the Ohio State defense.
So just to recap a little bit where things were at the end of the night with regard to stats, because some of the numbers on the Alabama side are mind-blowing. Mac mm-hmm. Jones kind of gets lost in this a little bit. We talk about Devontae Smith, but Mac Jones did just an admirable job running this offense all year. Five touchdowns, no picks, threw for 464 in this football game. Devontae Smith, his final line was 12 for 215 and three touchdowns. That came in the first half. Don't kid yourselves. If he had played the entire game, I don't know what these numbers would have looked like, because Ohio State had no answer for him. John Mechie right. stepped up in that void after Devontae went down, 8 for 81, as did Najee Harris to some extent, 7 for 79 out of the backfield and a touchdown as well. He had something like 100 and something total yards of offense if you factor in what he did on the ground, which is 79 and two touchdowns as well. So a really right. good effort from Alabama on offense. No huge surprises there. On the flip side with Ohio State, Justin Fields, I guess a shade over 50% passing, 17 of 33, 194 and a touchdown, also led the team in rushing yardage with 67. He was clearly hurt in yeah. this football game. He was clearly hurt.
And he did take a shot. I referenced that yeah. fourth down that they punted on in plus territory. He had taken a big shot and was wincing before that play. There is a certain amount of calculus, I'm sure, from yeah. Ryan Day in saying, you know, is Justin Fields physically up for this moment? But it was still, you know, we're watching it without the full amount of information, but you're right. He was hurt and he had a couple really nice runs. Master Teague had a couple really nice runs, but it was tough to watch. And I don't believe when a team loses by what, 28? Is that my math correct?
Yep.
What does a healthy Justin Fields do when he has the Buckeye defense not holding up its end of the bargain? Maybe they lose by 20, maybe they lose by 17. Yeah. I don't think it's a big difference.
I don't think one of the advantages of playing and losing to a team like Alabama, like we talked about this after Notre Dame lost, you often come away feeling like there were a couple things that could have gone differently, but ultimately, even if everything goes right, you still lose by two touchdowns. And right. that was probably the case here against Ohio State as well. Fields, I don't mean to imply that Fields was too hurt to play. I saw...
No, for sure. He was just in pain.
After the game, they asked him, you know, were you hurt? How'd you feel? And he said, I was able to be out there, which right. is as much of a non-answer as you're going to get. The kid was clearly in pain. He's clearly a top prospect, maybe one of the best quarterbacks that's ever come through Columbus, Ohio. He couldn't do it single-handedly. He did his best. Again, 194, a touchdown, just over 50% completion percentage. Also did a number running the football. Master Teague, I thought, filled in admirably for Trey Sermon. Trey Sermon had one carry for 2 yards before he got hurt. Master yeah. Teague, 15 for 65 and two touchdowns. So played a part, did his best, wasn't enough. Chris Olave, I thought, had a good game. Garrett Wilson had that nice touchdown in the corner of the end zone.
Yeah.
So, you know, things I think that were overwhelmingly positive for Ohio State in offense, it was just overshadowed by the fact that they were frankly overwhelmed on the defensive side and could never make up that ground.
There's always going to be that storm coming, like the terrible Maynard voice I do. Oh, there's a storm coming. Could be second quarter, could be the first quarter, like we saw against Notre Dame earlier on in this game, perhaps. By the way, you're fighting Irish. Held them to 31. Was that the final?
Second year in a row where they could claim that they were closer to Alabama than the second place team. So there's that yeah. feather in their cap.
The blue and bronze of Notre Dame. Congratulations. So I just thought in watching this game, the things that were obvious, it came down to talent, it came down to health, it came down to availability, and it came down to, I'm curious what you think about this. I was watching a video this morning. I think it's Murph Baldwin who does Top Billing, and he's a big level of competition guy.
Okay.
And obviously Ohio State practices against an extremely high level of competition relative to most of the country. By the time Alabama got here, they had played, I believe, 11 SEC games, including the SEC championship game and Notre Dame. By the time Ohio State got here, they had played whatever it was, 5 or 6 games in the Big Ten against no team anywhere near complete. You know, no. Northwestern has a good defense, but their offense wasn't anything special this year. Alabama, in terms of muscle memory, and this is not like a commentary on like, oh, the SEC is man ball, whatever. But right. having played the offenses that they played, especially, I felt like seasoned them in a way. I took his point well, Murph's point well, that Alabama came into this game prepared to adjust to things on offense that Ohio State hadn't necessarily seen. Now, nobody can prepare for Devontae Smith. That's an outlier. But in terms of the comfort level of Alabama in reacting with high, extremely high level talent, I thought that was an interesting take, that Alabama had come in with, I think, a higher level of firmware on defense.
Higher level of firmware.
Does that make any sense? I don't know. I took that point well.
Well, it does. It does. And it kind of speaks to, I think, the goofiness of, was it Dabo? I forget. Who had the issue with
it? Of course,
it probably was Dabo, to be fair. Yeah. Just assume. The whole notion of Ohio State being fresher.
Mm-hmm.
Fresher because they played fewer games going into the playoff. Look, Clemson lost.
Look, listen.
Listen, Clemson lost.
Yeah.
And we did talk about that angle before this football game. And I think we were on point with it as well. You know, maybe we didn't express it as eloquently, but
yeah,
it Alabama had their opportunity time and again to go up against some good offenses this year. We weren't sure how that was going to fare for them once they got into some of these bigger games. We didn't really see them go against a high-powered offense. I know statistically Notre Dame was up there in the semifinal game, but I think we knew better on this show, especially putting that Irish team against this Bama defense. This was like one of our final attempts at getting that matchup to see how they would truly fare against a good offense and a relatively good defense. And it just, you know, 28 points, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, man, the Kerry Coombs defense was not a fun watch for me. The way Pete Golding's defense over the course of the season evolved was pretty impressive. We saw Christian Barmore break through a couple different times. The interior of the Alabama defensive line, it should probably be stressed more than we have already, in disrupting a beaten up, certainly, you know, a backup or two in there along the inside of the Ohio State inside line, inside of their offensive line. It was just another mismatch in a series of mismatches in this game. And on all three levels, Ohio State wasn't fully able to take advantage of some coverage issues that Alabama has had this year in their linebacking core. And Ohio State is a great team. That's the thing. This is what Alabama does to teams. Unless it's a lightning, we talked about this on the stream as well, where it's, you know, Clemson bringing back what they do in a certain year on defense, you know, all these upperclassmen, or LSU last year. There has to be a certain degree of lightning in a bottle, or all those pass catchers for Ole Miss. Whatever it is, there has to be that element. And Ohio State, as is, you know, a very usual circumstance for teams, you're down guys, you're beat up, you're going up against excellence, and they just didn't have that last night. I don't know. Maybe this is the question, Ty. If this game is played 100 times, how many are close Alabama wins? How many are last night's wins?
I know.
And how many are, you know, a close Ohio State upset?
Yeah, I don't know if we can answer that on the flip
side.
No,
of course. This is just you guessing.
Yeah, let's put it this way. I feel like there's like a less than 10% chance Ohio State wins after watching what we saw. The other factor that we didn't even mention thus far is that Jalen Waddle was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of guys who looked hurt.
Yeah.
But he was out there. He was another guy that the Ohio State defense had to keep aware of because, again, as we said on the stream, going into the season, Jalen Waddle was their best receiver. And so to have him out there in any capacity, he's one of those gravitational guys that you like to talk about, Dan. We didn't know what to expect from him. If they play 100 times, maybe he doesn't tweak an ankle on the first carry or first touch that he gets of the football.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a different thing. If Waddle's out there healthy, if Devontae's out there healthy, if they play it 100 times, I don't see many pathways, especially in light of what we saw last night, for Ohio State to come out on top, or even for the game to be that much closer, to be honest, because it did not feel to me like Ohio State did a whole lot wrong. They were just overwhelmed defensively and didn't have an answer for all the playmakers on the Alabama side.
Yeah. No, they were. We noted this. Like Alabama was not able to get loose too much beyond Devontae Smith, you know, getting the ball in the backfield and turning, you know, a swing pass or a sort of a motion led pass into 12 or 13 yards. When Mac Jones completed passes, when Najee Harris got the ball, they picked up yardage. But in the open field, they didn't make Ohio State miss. Ohio State tackled well. This, you know, there was very little that could be done by the players because of the position they were put in on defense and just how good Alabama was. And I mean, I'll come back to the same point I made to sort of open things up. In that second half, Ohio State got a stop and forced Alabama to kick a field goal. So at that point, it was 38-17?
Yeah.
Yes, 38-17.
21-point game.
The Fetty Wap score, 17-38. And then Ohio State immediately drove down the field and scored. It's a two-touchdown game in the third quarter, which is within reach, 38-24. And you were talking about it, and you were asking, you weren't saying, but you're like, is this where Alabama sort of packs it in and runs clock and leans on Najee Harris and Brian Robinson? And what Nick Saban did was, no, this is where we go all gas, no brakes, because this is who we are in this moment. And they scored, I don't know, it was like a 3-minute drive or something like that, but they marched down the field and then got a stop and marched down the field again, running their offense. They weren't, you know, they weren't turtle shelling it. And that to me in that moment was like, this is the difference between a guy who's been here however many times. I know he has 7 rings now between LSU and Alabama.
Yeah.
And Ryan Day making his first appearance here is that there is this element of this is what we do. This is who we are. And unless we're up 35, 42, whatever, how many points, this is how we're rolling. This is the new reality of Alabama football. And it has been for a few years now.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Well, I'm glad you brought up number 7 for Nick Saban, because going into this game, he was tied with the Alabama great Paul Bear Bryant. This is number 7 for him. So he's now got more than the Bear. By the time all is said and done, Saban's going to go down as the greatest college football coach of all time.
He already is.
He already is.
Yeah.
And so much the way I felt fortunate to watch the likes of Michael Jordan on the basketball court, Tiger Woods on the golf course, Tom Brady on the football field, love them or hate them and their respective teams, there is a certain amount of, I think, respect with regard to watching greatness, to seeing it unfold. And this killing machine that Nick Saban has built at Alabama that never seems to have to rebuild, just constantly reloads. It's just so rare to see that in sports. Of course, we've seen the likes of Clemson. Maybe we're seeing it with Ohio State, with some other teams like Georgia. I mean, there's a select few, at least in college football, that can even really get into that conversation or nudge their way into that conversation. But kudos to what Saban has done. That what we're witnessing here over this last generation of college football at Alabama has really been remarkable. It's hard for me to believe that we'll see it matched again in our lifetime. And the scary part for college football is that Alabama has already been installed as a 3-1 favorite to win a national championship next year. And that is, I think, a little bit in front of Clemson, which is a 4-1 favorite. The point being, the divide between the haves and the have-nots in college football isn't going away anytime soon. And Alabama does not seem poised to relinquish this spot atop college football, even despite the fact that they're going to lose Mac Jones, they're going to lose Najee Harris, they're going to lose Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, a couple guys from their offensive line, some guys on defense. It's just a testament to
Steve Sarkisian, Steve Sarkisian's bringing with him. Yeah.
The turnover, that to me is kind of the underappreciated detail amid all this.
Right.
The turnover that Saban's had to deal with in his tenure, it's understandable and completely natural given the success. But the fact that he's still able to turn out such a high quality product year in and year out only emphasizes the point that he's the greatest coach of all time.
Yeah, and it's not even such a high quality product. It's like you said, it's a completely new staff from where they were 3 years ago.
Amazing.
And they do it every year, have to replace multiple dudes. I mean, the rock to this program, of course, was the strength coach, Scott Cochran, who left for Georgia to become their special teams coach. He hires a couple guys from Indiana, the head of sports medicine and the new strength coach. Don't miss a beat. And he's going to bring in what? Bill O'Brien?
Yep.
The butt chin's coming to Tuscaloosa.
Butt chin.
And they're not going to miss a beat because he has all of these recruits that have been fantastic. Bryce Young's going to take over, presumably, at quarterback after getting a little bit of time to run the offense this year. And if you think about this in like any sort of office or a restaurant or whatever, you lose your entire staff and all you do is year over year just keep making more money.
Yeah.
You just keep making, you're more successful, you're more efficient, you're more historically successful just because you're able to build on things and the people don't matter as much as the process is the cliched word here, but just the infrastructure and the way of doing things and the man at the top is so good at all of the little things, which is what some of the players talked about. So, no, it'll be fascinating to see where this offense goes. I don't think the system is going to change dramatically, but they're going to have a really smart offensive mind once again running things. And Bill O'Brien, who I don't think anybody questions his acumen as an offensive mind.
Yeah, run the personnel.
Yeah, it's more the administrative stuff, which he's not going to have to worry about.
Yeah, don't worry about
he can be a football coach.
He's never going to be a GM again, we'll say that. But
right.
I don't think, to your point, I don't think anybody questions his acumen on the offensive side of the football. He did, remember, with his short stint at Penn State, he did a pretty good job bridging that gap and keeping things moving in a good direction, was able to retain some recruits. Probably got the most out of Christian Hackenberg that anybody was able to in his time in State College. And, curious to see what he can do at Alabama. He will obviously have a lot more weapons to work with than he did at Penn State.
And even if he's there for a year, by the way, he could say, this is what we did with Deshaun Watson. This is what we did with Allen Robinson at Penn State. I believe he crossed over, right? With Allen Robinson.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what he has this track record. Now, he's not going to trade anybody at Alabama for a Laramie Tunsil crazy deal, anything like that. Or who did they trade last year? I don't know my NFL that well. The Nuke Hopkins, right?
Yeah.
To Arizona. But it's going to be fascinating to see where this Alabama program heads just in general, to see who else potentially leaves and who Nick Saban replaces guys with. Because what you're able to do for your career by becoming an assistant or coordinator at Alabama is unmatched anywhere in the sport. And will be fascinating to see where Ohio State goes from here, to see how they make that what seems like a small but still enormous leap to get over a team like Alabama in a national championship game, because they've got these incredible quarterbacks coming in, another incredible class or two or three classes lined up. But is that leap in them? Because Justin Fields is gone. They're starting over at quarterback. And whether it's, C.J. Stroud or whoever it is that takes over, who is crazy well-regarded coming in.
Yeah.
They're starting over. And it's they have an enormously high ceiling because the Big Ten offers no obvious counterpoint. And so they should end up in this situation as a playoff team more often than not. They've lost, what, three straight since beating Oregon in the national championship?
Yeah.
Lost to Clemson. And sorry, they didn't lose three straight because they just beat Clemson. But before that, they were losing. And so it'll be fascinating to watch because right now it is. It is this grouping of Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson, and then everybody else. And I think Ohio State has it in them, but they're going to have to get better on defense. They're going to have to get better probably at defensive coordinator. And they're going to have to be able to, you know, catch lightning in a bottle health-wise or scheme-wise or something, because you just have to pencil in Alabama until proven otherwise.
So for those of you wondering, what are the final rankings? Because the rankings don't really matter, but...
Hit me.
We do have the final AP poll. Alabama obviously won, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, Texas A&M finally makes it to number 4, Dan. A&M.
What are your thoughts on, I haven't seen this on social media. This is just a total straw man argument for me where an A&M fan can say, well, we lost 52-24.
Yep.
Why not us? They would have lost worse than 52-24 to Alabama with time and energy and focus and a season of adjustments under their belt.
Yeah. A&M, by the way, won that game over North Carolina, 41-27 in the Orange Bowl. Yep. To close out the season. So they get up to 4. Notre Dame drops to 5 after losing by 17 to Alabama. To round out the top 10, we had Oklahoma, who destroyed Florida in the Cotton Bowl by a 55-20 score. They finish at number 6. Georgia, which won that squeaker over Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. They're at 7. Cincinnati finishes at 8, one spot behind Georgia, which feels about right. Iowa State, which knocked off your Oregon Ducks 34-17.
Yep.
They finish at number 9 and Northwestern.
Chaz Kohler coming back, right?
And Northwestern. Yep. Northwestern won the bowl game over Auburn. They finished 7-2. A good year for the Cats. They are in the top 10.
This is the AP.
Let me just rifle through a few other teams.
I'm looking at the playoff rankings, the final playoff rankings, but okay. That's final playoff rankings going into. Okay, continue with the AP.
BYU at 11, Indiana 12, Florida 13, Coastal Carolina at 14, and Louisiana finishing at number 15. So won't read all the teams off there, but that does it for the 2020 season. Can you believe it?
I can. You'd neglected to mention Oregon also received 21 votes for the top 25, sir. Yeah, what a season, man. What a season. I think Thursday, so this is Tuesday that this will be released and we're streaming this live, but Thursday maybe will be like a lingering questions episode after the season has finally been completed. So if you want, you know, drop in some questions on any of our social feeds or solidverbal@gmail.com. What are your look back thoughts after a season that lasted 27 years?
It's been a journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think, to put it mildly, we kind of came at this from many different perspectives. I remember doing a live stream with you back in April. This is back when you were contemplating leaving New York because of...
Oh, I was gone. I left New York March 31st.
March 31st,
or 30th,
okay.
Or whatever, yeah.
Well, you had either left or were about to leave. And mm-hmm. I remember back then, end of March, early April, we were discussing, what is this going to mean for college football? Now, we didn't have, you know, of course we know more now, but we didn't know. Yeah. At the time, what it was going to mean. We were keeping our fingers crossed that it wouldn't have any kind of lasting impact. At the time, we were hopeful that it wouldn't. Obviously, as things kind of worsened and intensified throughout the course of the summer and then going into the fall, we knew better. And that's when the season took such an odd turn. I am grateful as a college football fan that we were able to play a season.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be lying if I said I weren't mixed on the manner in which it happened, or, you know, just some of my own personal thoughts around whether or not they should or shouldn't be playing. But the fact of the matter is, they did get the season in. It seems like, for the most part, they were able to do so safely. And I am ever hopeful that going forward into 2021, we can get back to quote-unquote normal. Whatever that looks like, come the fall.
I'll take normal-ish.
Yeah, I'll take normal-ish. Just something closer to the kids being able to get out there and play without having all the virus restrictions. Fans hopefully being able to get back in stands or at least tailgate and do so more comfortably without all the restrictions. You know, I don't want people to get sick.
Yeah.
I know you're in the same boat. And without having to worry about
that. Man, I saw the celebration in the streets last night in Alabama.
I was a little skeeved out by that.
I hope everybody's all right.
I understand. I understand the optimism, the jubilation. But I don't want people to get sick. And I hope moving forward, in whatever reality we find ourselves in come August, I hope we are closer to a situation in which we can get back to closer to normal without having that fear of people getting sick.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, it's a different world now than it was in the early spring of 2020. And I'm just hopeful that we get to live in a world where we don't have college football coaches offering up their public thoughts.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dabo. Super helpful. Thanks. Really appreciate it.
I am good with Dabo Swinney being a super optimistic college football coach.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that reality.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the circumstances of today have forced these coaches into a bit of a box where they've got to comment on a lot of other things, and they're not always the ones with the most perspective.
Yeah. No, it definitely felt like a TV season. Yeah. More than any season I've ever watched, where it's just like, we're going to lose a ton of money from the gate and from all sorts of, you know, auxiliary elements of the college football universe not existing. Got to get these games on TV. Got to get them on TV. And yes, you know, the players practice hard, and yes, they work all their lives for this moment. And yes, there is a definite element of that. But the season happened for TV. And so it would be nice to at least pretend in 2021 that the season's happening because the season should just happen like it does every year, and that there is tailgating that you can watch with your friends in a way that you couldn't necessarily do in 2020, that you can, it can be this social element of our world that just wasn't there. So I mean, look, watching a game, we talked about this, watching a game with very limited or no fans, it's different.
It was different on 1,000 different levels. And I hope when we're doing this a year from now, we're telling a much, much different story. I'm hopeful that we will.
I cannot wait to have a quarterback struggle to hear things, to hear the booth, to struggle to communicate with his offensive line and make adjustments and, you know, change things up at the snap because the crowd is so overbearing. I can't wait to see a camera shake because the stadium is literally jumping up and down.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that in places like Seattle or wherever. I can't wait. And I just, you know, every digit is crossed, Ty, that we get it in a responsible way.
Well, here's to better days ahead.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Alabama for winning yet another national championship. Nick Saban cementing his legacy as the greatest college football coach of all time. We will have an entire offseason to unpack what transpired in 2020. It is one of the things that we're going to be focused on, just taking a look at some specific instances throughout the course of the last year that we feel need a little bit of a deeper dive. So that will be forthcoming. But in the immediate aftermath now of the national championship, our next show is going to be on Thursday. From this point forward, at least until we get closer to the season and start doing previews and actually hopefully have more normal-ish football to talk about, we'll be going twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday. So set your calendars and watches accordingly. Please do subscribe to the show if you haven't already. If you're just finding us, we'd appreciate it if you stop on by, hop on over into any of our social channels. If you're ever so inclined, you can also go and check out verballers.com. We do have a Patreon. We are doing all sorts of fun stuff over there, even throughout the offseason that I know we're excited to share with the Verballerhood. So I think a good season for us, Dan. You know, we added a lot of knickknacks here, not the least of which is video, as some people are watching. I think, really pushed the envelope amid strange circumstances for us and the entire like sports media vertical as well. So I think we should give ourselves a pat on the back for a job well done this year. And, you know, let's carry this momentum forward into the new year here.
Yes. And also, will you it's called two-factor authentication, Ty, right?
Yeah.
If Alabama ever finds itself in a national championship game and is historically excellent and transformational on either side of the ball, and I decide to not roll with them against the spread, will you ask me twice if I'm sure? will you socially two-factor authenticate
the code
my pick
on your authenticator app to confirm that yes, I can do that?
That's what I need from you. Just like, are you sure you are not going to give the points? Yes. Okay. I hear you, but are you sure? That's what I need from you.
I need
to
a QR scanned confirmation. Okay.
Yep.
Well, look, we appreciate y'all hanging with us.
Yes.
We will be back on Thursday. I think that does it. Again, your national champion, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Big time victors on Monday evening in Miami, Dan.
Yeah.
Good season.
Yeah. All things considered.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand over here in Eastern Pennsylvania, we will talk to y'all on Thursday. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.